Okay, let's begin. We're up to Parak Tes Pasuk Yud Gimel. Ephraim Kasher Isi Litzar. The Pasuk is comparing Ephraim Aser Sashvatim to the nation of Tsar. We know the nation of Tsar. We lived in Sefer Yecheskel. It was a nation called Tsar during the Tkufa of the Bayis. It's not exactly where they exist. It's not exactly clear. I don't remember. But this nation of Tsar Tyre was at the top of the world. It was the center of the world of commerce, of Ashirus success. It was an island country, and it was Shesula. Over here, the way the Pasuk here in Hosea, he describes Tsar with these very beautiful words, Shesula b'Noveh. It's planted in the state, in the Noveh means Lashon of beauty, or you know, it really means an abode, a home. We'll see more details in the Mefarshim, but it represented the ultimate success story. A country that had an economy that was vibrant, the people were happy, there was no poverty, everyone was successful. The only problem was they did not attribute their success to Hashem. They attribute their success to their own power. And therefore, what happened to Tsar? They were conquered, they were obliterated, they were completely destroyed to the point where a tsunami or some type of a natural disaster occurred where it completely flooded this island to the point where I think Ad Hayom Hazeh, it's underwater. The something happened where it's submerged. What used to be an island that used to be above water has been completely at this point in time.
Some people think that the legend of Atlantis grew out of the Tyre story.
Tsar. Okay, so this is a big topic in Sefer Yecheskel. We learned this. We spent a lot of time learning this Tsar. Here, the pasuk in a very frightening way compares the Aser Sashvatim to Tsar. Just like Tsar, once upon a time was a mashal, a dogma of the ultimate success, but it came to an end. So too, the Aser Sashvatim, although it may appear to an observer that it's a wonderful country, they're successful, people have parnasa, people are happy, the end is going to be, they're going to be completely wiped off the face of the map. And then we know that came true, the Aser Sashvatim were exiled, and as far as we know, they did not return, they're lost from Klal Yisrael. The Ephraim, and here the Pasuk emphasized this point, although in the past I've seen you are comparable to Tsar, which was a country that was Shesula, that was rooted, it was planted, firmly implanted, binoveh, in a state of tranquility, of beauty, of happiness. The word noveh has many connotations. We have to see a more precise meaning in a few moments. But already look in the Mitsudos Tzion. He says on page 139, binoveh inyan modar, a dwelling place. It just means an abode. It was an abode that was Shesula. We have to really translate it backwards. An abode that was firmly rooted. There was no concern that no one ever imagined in their wildest dreams that it would one day come to an end. Yet, what happened? It did come to an end. And here the Pasuk says, Ephraim, you're going to suffer the same fate. L'hoitzi, you're going to go out el to those people who are Hoireg Banav, who kill, murder your children. The enemy is going to attack. The goal of the enemy is to destroy you. And the way the Pasuk, it's a unique expression, the way the Pasuk describes an enemy, the way it describes an enemy is with the term Hoireg Banav. Who is the first one to get this to be awarded this term? Paro, Mitzrayim. Kol Habein Hayiloid. This was the goal of Paro, to destroy the Banim, the children. So therefore here, we're comparing the Sancheriv, is now being called by that term. He is the one who is Hoireg Banav. The Aseres HaShvatim are going to go to greet him, or here means they're going to go to war. They're going to go out of their cities to engage in battle against Sancheriv, who's coming to exile them. And of course, they're going to lose this war. And they're going to be shackled and marched naked. There were three different waves. We learned this many, many times. Three different waves of exiles of the Aseres HaShvatim. The first was very pleasant. They went first class coach buses. They were taken to Ashur. The second was a bit more brutal. And the third wave of exiles was just a disgrace. I think it says in the Pesukim that they were marched naked. They were marched naked from Eretz Yisrael to Ashur. And here we're describing Ashur with this very brutal term called Hoireg Banav. Let's see the Mefarshim inside Pasuk Gimel in the Metzudos David. Pasuk Gimel on page 139, Ephraim Atta you Ephraim, Hine, Hoyisa Bemaula Gedoyla. In the past, you were held in high esteem. Kimoyesho Isi, you were held in high esteem, just like I held in the highest esteem Tsar, or they were held in high esteem throughout the world. Kimoyesho Isi, as Tsar, Shehi Shisula Bim Doira. They were firmly implanted in a Bim Doira, which in a Mador. A Mador means in a dwelling place. Bimala Gedoyla, in a very great, with great honor. A very great, Ma'ala Gedoyla, they had a very great, what's a good term? Stature. They were status. They had very great, they were exalted status in the world. Kach Hayisa Gamato, Ephraim, you also had that exalted status. And what happened? The Ephraim, Ritzon Elohim, Marvin Ephraim, Mogmul Shilem. What happened? What did they do? Nisasek, now Nisasek, the Mitzudos is telling the Nupshat. I told you a different shot. The Mitzudos is really drawing from the Targum. And here it says, L'chaytzi es horeg banav, how did you reciprocate to Hashem the kindness that he has bestowed upon you? Instead of thanking Hashem and being good to Hashem and observing the Torah mitzvahs, what did you do? You worshipped Moloch. What is the worship of Moloch? To take your children and to sacrifice them or to burn them before this God. And that is a terrible, terrible sin. Is that how you reciprocate to Hashem when he's so good to you? You take the ultimate gift that Hashem gave you, your children, and you offer them as sacrifices to the gods. So therefore, obviously, you're going to suffer the consequences of Tsar. You're also going to be obliterated off the face of the earth. So Ephraim, what Gemul did Ephraim pay back Hashem? How did Ephraim reciprocate for Hashem's kindness? The Meshalem Ro'o Tachas Toiva. Nisasek lohitzi banav el hoireg lesvachim lavodis chachavni oisek, and taking their children to offer them as sacrifices to idols. Okay, so we read the pasuk again inside. We have more appreciation. Ephraim kasharisi letzar shisula bin aver. Ephraim, in the good old days, you were successful. You would like the greatest example of success in this world. Tsar, that was firmly implanted as a symbol of success in a beautiful dwelling place. But Ephraim, how do you reciprocate for the kindness, the good that Hashem has given you? You went out to kill your own children by offering them as sacrifices. Let's see Rashi. Ephraim, kasharisi letzar b'shalvasa ma'atira. They were in a state of tranquility and a state of ma'atira, of honor, glory. Va'ashira al kol hamedinas. They were the wealthiest of all the nations. Kain re'isi le'Ephraim shesula binaveh. Ephraim likewise was implanted in a state of tranquility in the abode, but Ephraim magmul shilim li. How did they reciprocate? In this asik le'hoitzi es el horeg banav. L'zoifchem, they went out to murder their own children. L'zoifchem, l'avodah zarah, shel moylech, kein tirgem yoyimasan. Okay, now let's take a look over here at...
The word that troubles me is lehotzi. Why...
Oh, okay. What's... Okay, yeah.
Because it should have said, Ephraim, motzi en el horeg banav. What is this? This is using the infinitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they have to throw in
Nisasek,
they need another word.
Aha. Nisasek, that's why Rashi is throwing the word. That Nisasek, they busy themselves with Lahoitzias el Horeg Banav, to bring their children to the priests who would kill their children as a sacrifice to Moloch. Okay? And Echanami. That's why Rashi is very cleverly, Rashi very often does that. He adds in words to smooth the reading of the pasuk, because the pasukim are written in a very short form.
Imagine the Yetzer the horror of Avodah Zarah that they.
We can't imagine it. It's beyond our wildest understanding of what they did. Certainly, much more intelligent than us.
I know they were intelligent.
So, what were they doing? So, obviously, there's a lot that we don't understand. We don't understand how the Yetzer hara for Avodah Zarah. It's really, really beyond us. Okay, now let's take a look over here. Let's see the Radak. What? today, will they understand our lifestyle? Will they understand our
Busy just stand looking at it.
I don't know. Maybe you don't know. It's who knows. Okay, let's see the Radak. Radak pasuk Gimel Ephraim Kasher Isi Litzar Shuslo Benaver Isi Ephraim B'Shal V'Gedayla. Okay, so far it starts off similar. I saw them in a state of tranquility. Kimoy Shor Isi Litzar, just like I saw Tzar Shuslo Al Hayam Benaver. Now he is only Al Hayam. Okay, he is, and doesn't say that in the pasuk. Tzar, we know from Sefer Yecheskel, was an island surrounded 360 degrees by water. All sides was water. Al Hayam Benaver. Toiv, in a beautiful abode, the Achar Kach Kisuha Hamayim. What became of Tsar? So we know where it is today. I think there are islands today known in the Mediterranean that are buried underneath the water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are. So one of those islands has to be, according to one interpretation, is Tsar, no?
Maybe.
This Tsar in Sidon. Sidon L'Chair is in Lebanon. It's a city. It's a city. No, but I know the names they have today are not. It's very unlikely the names, the modern names of Tyre and whatever Sidon is. It's very unlikely that these names are the same location, the cities that have been established, or the island that we refer to today as Tyre.
The old nations are. Basically, they are.
Yeah, but Tsar? Tyre today?
Not
silver. It could be. Because Chazal say he drowned.
Is it that it was an island in the Mediterranean? Now it could be perhaps not far from where the
like
Yericho city is today, but they named it for it. But
it seems it was very common that when a city went down, they built a new city with the same name as a zecher for the old city. And it's been proven there are many ancient cities today which are just reestablishments of other cities that existed elsewhere, not so far away, that had that name, like Yericho. So
Jericho, New York.
Yeah. but even in Eretz Yisrael,
Yericho is in the same place. It was rebuilt during the time of the Malachim.
No, so it seems not in the same place. They built it, I think they even today have proven that they have archaeological studies where they've uncovered what they claim to be the real Yerichai. And it was very surprising, it was a very small city, it wasn't such a big city. And all right, no one really knows, there's so many questions, but one of the approaches that I think you hear a lot about is there were cities that were destroyed, and they built new cities nearby. Nearby, very close nearby.
That's Yericho. It's right next to the
ocean. It's next, exactly. So we talk about Tyre. Okay, Tyre today, I don't know, it's an island, Tyre?
No, it's a coast.
It's right on the coast.
Okay, so L'chore, that's not the tsar of Yecheskel, of Tanakh.
But Sidon, I don't recall.
Okay, so Sidon. All right, so we don't know about Sidon. That's a very big question, because where exactly is Sidon? I think there are different difficulties in
Sidon was along the coast, because it says V'yarkoso Yal Sidon.
Correct, but is it Sidon right today, it's not so clear that Sidon today, what they called Sidon today, is the Sidon in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech went to Chiroim. He was the
Melech
Tzor, and he was also, an alliance with Sidon.
Right of Tzor is an island that's sunk. It's called the Island of Hercules. It's right of Tzor. You're in a sunken island.
Okay, so that might is the real Tzor.
Tzor itself was on an island. The only one. And Alexander built a causeway connecting it to the
land. Uh-huh. And what about Sidon? All of these cities, almost everything, you go down the line, no one really knows. There's so much that's unknown. Maybe, yeah, maybe not. Okay, but certainly Tsar, Chazal tell us, look over here, he quotes over Yechesel, the Achar Kach Kisuha Hamayim. So you want to say that it was a tsunami and then the water is receded and then the island is once there's an island again? I don't know. Maybe, yeah, maybe, yeah, maybe not. But anything is over here, Kach Kisuha Hamayim. Kainu isi so to so here the pasuk the radak and tv see a friend shiotziata el horig banov. So here the radak is learning not like the targum, not like Rashi and the mitzvahs who drew from the targum. Ephraim shiotziata he's exiting. Ephraim the aseres hashvatim are leaving their cities. Where are they going? El horig banov. They're going to Ashur. Because Ashur is the country that will destroy their children. And we know they did. What do we mean they destroy their children literally, physically? Not necessarily. But they destroy their children spiritually in this that they assimilated and the Aseres HaShvatim have disappeared from Klal Yisrael. So here they're going, I see them leaving to go to a land where in that land it will be fulfilled, their children will come to an end. The enemy will come upon them. He's saying over here it's more battle. They will go out of their cities to engage in war. And they will lose the battle. And the battle will be won by Ashur. The enemy will kill their children. What does word lehoitzi mean in this context? Maybe Rabbi Chol is coming to really address your question, and maybe you can learn this in any all the interpretations. Hinehu mizumon b'karoiv lehoitzi. So maybe lehoitzi means when it comes to Avodah Zarah as well. Over here it means that it's the lamed has some type of connotation that it's all set to go. Everything is ready. Mizumon b'karoiv lehoitzi, to come forth. And maybe when you want to talk about Avodah Zarah, maybe it means that Klal Hashem is complaining that Hashem has been so good to you, and yet lehoitzi, you're mizumon. On a moment's notice, you will give your children to the priest for it to be burnt in a sacrifice to Moloch. So maybe that's also what it means. To answer your question, why do we use the unusual expression lehoitzi in regard to the Targum's interpretation of Avodah Zarah? It does not mean that they ran. It means they were on standby, right? They said they are selves, right? They were prepared.
That's what Nisaseg means in Rashi.
Nisaseg, they're busy. They're involved. They're all ready to go. We're all ready. Just give us a call, and we're ready to go. The Ephraim, you write Shem Klal, Shai Ephraim would be like a noun referring to the Aseres HaShvatim, Kodol Bonav HaPratim, El Shazach, El Shazach, he goes to some grammar. Okay, whatever, let's leave that alone. Okay, let's now take a look over here at the Malvim. We went to the Malvim. Okay, let's now go to the next Pasuk. Okay, let's go forward. Let's move ahead. Pasuk Yudal, Tein Lechem Hashem. Now, here is one of the most frightening psukim in the entire Tanakh. And I'm not joking, because I'm not saying this. This is a medrash. This is what I'm going to hear today. Really, really, you know, really scary stuff. Okay, really scary stuff here. Yeah, Hoshea over here gets a little carried away. Hoshea, it bothered him very, very much. The fact that Klal Yisrael were not observant. They were rebelling against Hashem, so he curses them. And he says like this, it's unbelievable what he writes here. Tein lohem Hashem matitein. Give them what they deserve. Hashem, may you give the Jewish people what matitein, what you will give them. What is that? If that's not enough. Tein lohem rechem mashkil, a womb that bereaves its children, its fetuses, meaning that a woman who becomes pregnant should miscarry or should not become pregnant, period. Or it means they should die. Basically, the children, the whole process of reproduction should not function correctly. It includes everything. It's like a very, very big vishodayim tsoimkim, and breasts that are withered. In the event that a child is born, the child should starve to death. The mother should not be able to produce milk to feed the child. And this is a big deal. Today it's a modern world. There's formula and there's all these other techniques to feed children. Some women will never even think of nursing. But we learned in the Gemara talks about it was a very big deal. A woman who is nursing, so there are many halachas about that she has to be very careful to make sure that she does not become pregnant, because if she becomes pregnant, that will cause her to stop nursing, and then the child may die, and the husband has an obligation to feed his wife certain types of foods, which will cause her to have milk to feed the child. The only nourishment an infant had was the milk of his mother. There was nothing else. Vizehu. That was it. And if a woman was not able to nurse properly, it was literally pikuach nefesh for the child. So here when he gives a curse for shtayim tsoim kim that their breasts should wither, it means in the event that the children are born, they should die from starvation. Let's see the mitzvah of Pasuk Yudalit.
But isn't it interesting, the Hashem, that the Pasuk uses the one of Brachmanis?
Oh, very good. Very, very good. Very good. So thing over here is that, it does say Elohim, is that there is still a sliver lining that there should be rachamim in the din.
It's like connecting, but very close with each other.
Yes, it is. But over there wasn't in the form of a curse. It was there was a prediction. In Pasuk Yidal was just a statement. Ephraim ka'oif yis oifeif kavoid. I'm just saying what's going to happen. Here he's saying something much more powerful. I'm not saying this. The Medrash is saying this. Tein lohem Hashem. Over here, Hosea gets personal. He's not just relaying Hashem's message. He's now speaking on his own. He's all worked up. He's emotionally involved in this mission. And he now curses Klal Yisrael. Let's see the Mitzvah stuff. Pasuk, the Mitzvah stuff, and Pasuk Gedalit. Tein lechem ma titein, ritzen lemar. Ma she titein liachaz man, tein lechem biyad. Now, the Mitzvah stuff wants to put a good spin on this. Now, what I said before, I don't take back, because that's what it says in the Medrash. We'll come to that in a moment. But the Mitzvah stuff, obviously, is so disturbed. It's so disturbed with this Medrash. He says, no, let's learn Pashup Shat. Pashup Shat is not a curse. Adarabah, he's trying to temper, he's trying to lighten the severity of the punishment of the Aseres HaShvatim. And he's saying, Hashem, do them a favor, let them die immediately, because if they're going to become older, then the Avelus of an adult is much, much more painful than the Avelus of a child. Let's see, Tein Mati, Tein Mati Leimar, Ma Shetitin Li'achar Zman, Tein Lohem Biyad. What you are planning to give them, I know Hashem, you're angry at these people. I know Hashem, you're going to bring about a premature death. If they have to die prematurely due to their sins, let them die as infants. Let them be stillborns. Let them not even conceive these children, because Ein Edoyme the Tsar of a young adult to the Tsar of an infant. Like we learned this really yesterday. Ma Shetitin Lechem Aliachas Mantin Lechem Yad.
Judged as
Avar Yonim if they're
young.
Well, that's certainly true. Ben Soyre Moire, Mutav Yomus Zakai, Vial he's Dan al Shem Soifai, in the premature death. Exactly. So that's also built in. But over here, he's not, over here, the Mesuzah, that's not the focus. We're not really focusing on the Tikkun for their Neshama. We're focusing on the pain that their parents and the tzibu will experience in their death. Why should they die as adults, young adults, when there is a very, very great intense pain? Toiv Yosef Shatiti Lochem Rechem Mashkil Hashem, give them, they should be stillborns. Sheneshe Ephraim Yapilu Uborum Mace, they should have miscarriages. Oy Sheyu Shidei Nisho Sehem Senkim, and they shall starve immediately when they're born. Ritzot Eloimar Shaloy Yis Abu Klau, okay, he's single here at Senkim, he's single here at Shaoz Hashadayim. He's giving over a very interesting interpretation. So when a woman becomes pregnant, so in preparation for feeding the children, so she develops in a certain way. So if that development does not happen, that automatically means that she's not going to become pregnant. The pregnancy is not going to be triggered. It's selu mazeh. So shelo yisabu klal she'oz, the woman is not become pregnant. Hashlaim tzaimkim uni guvim, they're dry mibli lachluches cholav. When a woman becomes pregnant, this is a mitzvah, so when a woman becomes pregnant, so then the Hashem is preparing her to nurse the child. There's lachluches bidadeha, and if it's not going to be lachluches bidadeha, that automatically means the other side of the coin is true. The woman is not in a state of pregnancy, and these children are not going to be born. And by them not being born, that is a blessing in disguise, because if they would be born, they would do nothing but sin before Hashem, and they would be punished and they would die young. So it's not good for their neshamas, and it's not good for the Klal Yisrael and the parents who are going to suffer depression and frustration in witnessing the pain of these young people dying. Okay, that's how he learns pshat in the pasuk. So therefore he's trying to put a good twist. The Mitzudos over here is trying to say that Yehoshua really is being mispalel, a barucha for Klal Yisrael. You don't know what's good. There are many stories like this. Many stories, you know, you have to go look at all the Gedolim stories, whether you believe them or not. Some of these old stories is where people went to brachas to Gedolei Yisrael. And the Gedolei Yisrael, we don't know how this works. They had insight that we do not have. And they did not want to give a bracha. They did not want to give a bracha for children, for Shidduchim. And the explanation is that they saw, Al Pi Ruach HaKodesh, talking about Gedolim from the previous generations, is that it's not for your ultimate good. You think having a child is going to be a bracha. You don't know Hashem's ways. My mother once told me this story. I told you the story before. Is that there was somebody, Rav Moshe. There was a woman who came to Rav Moshe, and she didn't have children, and she did not let up. She badgered Rav Moshe nonstop, a bracha to have a child, and Rav Moshe never gave her a bracha. Ad kdei kach that she I think one of her children, maybe it was Rav David or Rav Ruvain, was there, and they were just shocked. And Rav Moshe, he was just like, maybe Yesh Rav David, this is true. This is not your derech. It's not your derech not to give a bracha. Well, why don't you give her a bracha? And Rav Moshe didn't say anything. And the woman did not let up. And at a weak moment, I don't know what it would be, moments, he said, okay, he gave her a bracha. She had a child, and it was not good, to say the least. My mother told me the child was not well from day one, and the child it was a very, very big tsara. And people who understood the story, who never understood why Rav Moshe was so difficult with her, they came to a new. No one knows anything. We don't know anything how these things work. But they came to believe the possibility that Rav Moshe had some insight that we do not have. He knew that it would not be good, and he was trying to save her. And listen, I mean, so we really do not know. We do not know what is good for us. I mean, whatever. These are very, very spooky stories. On the other hand, and I told you the story recently. I just find it. It's an amazing story. It's in the new recent biography of Rabbi Belsky, Zichron Levracha. Rabbi Belsky has a daughter. Her name is Tamar. She's married to Rechnitz, the famous. What's his name? Yehuda. What's his first name? Moshe Yehuda Rechnitz, the famous philanthropist, Moshe Yehuda Rechnitz, multi-millionaire, he gives a lot of money to tzedakah. So he's married to Rabbi Belsky's daughter, Tamar. When he got married, he didn't have a penny to his name. Mamash, penny to his name. He was in Kollel. Rabbi Belsky told him, I'll support you, I'll give you a few dollars. After a couple of years, he told Rabbi Belsky, I want to go to work. Rabbi Belsky was very disappointed. He says, by the Levaya. And he said, why do you want to go to work? If it's because I'm not supporting you, I'm not giving you enough money to live, I'll give you a little more. I'll give you a little more. So he told his father, well, no, the time has come. I want to make a parnasa. And he had siyat the shmai, and he became phenomenally wealthy. Okay, but who is he married to? So Rabbi Belsky, it says in the book that at a certain period in his marriage, his wife had multiple miscarriages, one after the other. She was pregnant again. She was pregnant with this girl whose name was going to be Tamar. And the doctor said, I don't know, I don't remember the details. We have to abort, or we got to do something because the baby's not going to survive. There's already a problem. I think the umbilical cord was wrapped around her neck, something like that. So he went, he was very close with Rav Moshe Belsky. I even remember when I was in the shir, Rav Belsky, you know, he lived with the dogma of two people in front of him all the time. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was his idol. You ever go to his house, a big, big picture of Yaakov Kamenetsky, you come into his house. He held the world. He lived in his... The most yuknoi of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was before Rav Belsky all the time, and Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe, he also, the chavivus of Rav Moshe is just off the charts. And so he was by Rav Moshe very often. And so he went to Rav Moshe. He told Rav Moshe, you know, I have a big tzara that the doctor said that the baby's going to die again. Another. So Rav Moshe, and this is very true. Rav Moshe, you hear a lot of stories about this. Rav Moshe is having a mispalel. He didn't wait. I'll take down your name. I'll put your name in Shemona Esrei. Rav Moshe's derech was when he wanted to be mispalel on the spot. Let's be mispalel. Took out a Tehillim And he sat with Rabbi Belsky right then and there, and he was, and they were mispala. Right then and there, they were mispala. And then after they were mispala, it's all in the book, I'm not making this up, Rabbi Moshe said it's going to be okay. Don't worry about it. Kachava, the baby was born, the umbilical cord was wrapped around her neck four times. The doctor said never in his career, or as far as I've known from my research, does ever exist such a thing that a child can survive in such a matzav. When the umbilical cord is wrapped around the neck four times, it's an open miracle. And Belsky attributed the miracle to the tefillah of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he named her Tamar, because Tamar is Rosh Tevois, Tefilas Rebbe Moshe. Tfilas Moshe, Tfilas Moshe Rabbeinu, Tamar. Tfilas, good morning. Tfilas Moshe, Moshe Nechazach. Tfilas Moshe Rabbeinu. So you see a story of Moshe was full of compassion. He was misfollowed. And it was Pearl Nisim. And yet there are stories where, you know, there are Gedolei Yisrael who did, you know, didn't give brachas. So you don't know what's good. Over here you see an insight in this pasuk. A very, very fascinating insight is that even the most basic things in life, of having children, like mamash, you know, the mamash, the bread and butter of life, having mish ein lebanim is mace, Chazal say. So here, the most basic thing, Hoshea is saying, it's not in your best interest to have children. Isn't that shocking? What are you going to gain? The children, I'm telling you as a fact, they're going to do averus, they're going to die young. What? It was not Belsky's first child. That's what it says in the book. It was somewhere in the middle of his men, in the middle of his children. So you see an incredible insight. Mamash, the most base Misha Ein Loi Bonim is Choshev Kemes. And yet, Hoshea says, you know, you don't know Hashem's ways. B'chiv Shei D'Rachman Olamolach, you don't know Hashem's ways. He's saying here, it would be better for you not to have children, and you should not come lidei to this Agmas Nefesh.
That's look at the Rabbi Bernstein in London, he said, that's what means. Be happy. You know, the people who don't have children by Chorban, they're not going to lose any children. So be happy. You know, the people who have a lot of families, then they.
It's hard to accept that.
Right. No, I know. He said, at least the good news is you won't have to sit shiva for anybody.
Okay, you know, these are all things Achar HaMaisa, but today there are so many organizations, A-Time, and what's it called? Bani Olam. I mean, you read the articles in the magazines, it's just amazing. Today, Baruch Hashem, there's technology like never before.
How do you think couples feel, older couples who miss the
Ferluch?
How do you think they feel? So many Gedolim have no children.
It's very, very sad. It's very, very sad. We don't look at Lubavitcher Rebbe and Satmar Rebbe. You know, we don't understand. It's like Bam Shapella.
Satmar Rebbe had two daughters.
They were Nifter. They were Nifter in
one
Europe.
One was Nifter in Europe, and one was Nifter here without children.
One was Nishapir.
No. Chaim Oizer. What about Chaim Oizer? He had a daughter.
Chaim Oizer had a daughter. That was Nifter as a teenager.
Yeah. So, you know, these are. It does. We have no clue.
Mamash. The
Chazanish.
Salem Arabi. Salem
Arabi. Mamash, no clue. It's beyond our understanding. But today, Baruch Hashem, no one has to be like that. Baruch Hashem today, I mean, you read the articles. I read the Bono early right there that there are many couples. The doctors told them it is 100% impossible. And then, all of a sudden, one day, there's a new technique. A new technique comes into existence. He pulls out the person who one of the founders, he himself died and doesn't have children.
The founder, Floyd right. Bacher.
So he writes, I read the article, a long time ago, they had a big write-up on it. And he writes, and they mamish, like mamish, yeyush gomor, it's like impossible. And then all of a sudden, one day, there's a new technique. They discover something, a new idea. He opens up all the files of the people who it was already finished. Written off, impossible. Oh! We have a new technique, and he goes through all the files, and they try, and sometimes it works.
It's not always the doctor. Sometimes it's the technician. There's a prominent technician, Maimonides, who moved there to Israel. He had a technique. He was very, very successful. He came to the doctor because he was using it.
Because what?
He came to a certain doctor who was used. That was his dedicated technician.
So today, Baruch Hashem, we live in a different world. But
we had a whole discussion about Chalekas there, about Mamzeres with Yoel and Rav Moshe.
No. I don't want to get it out.
They changed it today because of technology.
Right, right.
They're not using any more donor sperm.
Right.
They're using that anymore.
Exactly. Everything's from the parents. Exactly. 100%. Okay, so these are very big, but over here, I mean, it's just amazing what it says over here in this. If you think about what it's writing over here in the Mitzudah, so Rashi says they come out the same thing. Look at Rashi. Rashi over here says, Pasuk Yudal, the same, the Rashi is the Iker. Mitzudah is the watered down version of Rashi. But Rashi, hundreds of years before, writes the Iker words, Teluhem Rucha Kodesh, Teluhem Hashem Matitain, Hanavi Mispalel Shoyemusu Kitanim. He writes here powerful words. He was Mispalel, Tein Lohem is a tefillah. They should die as kitanim, she'enoi doime evloi shel katan le'evloi shel gadol. The mourning of an adult is so much more, especially a young adult, so in their prime.
Lefichach, a mourning for
an adult.
For an adult.
Is infinitely more than the mourning of a child.
Really?
Certainly, that yes. A person who already is a person.
No, but what he's saying is
he's saying they should die when they're infants, because even though there's no question that it's a horror, no one's denying the fact, the horror of a child dying, but it's minor relative to the horror of a young adult or a person in their prime. That leaves scars and psychological damage to the survivors much, much more than the damage done to society when a child dies. No one's denying. I mean, you hear the horror stories when Rahman al-Sultan, people are infants who die after waiting 9 months for a child, and all the frustration in conceiving and this and that, and then they have a child, then Rahman al-Sultan, child dies. I mean, you know, all the psychologists can't help, can't put the person back on their feet. But that's still minor relative to Rahman al-Sultan, a person who's already a person, you know, a young adult, person in their prime. The damage, the impact upon the relatives is much, much greater. So, Hanavi Mispal Shem Musa Katanim Shein Nedoyma Evle Shel Katan Evle Shel Gadol. Therefore, in EF Shel Meleda. So if we say Hashem, they shouldn't really, Rashi is tying this past back on yesterday. If it can't be that you can terminate the pregnancy at Leida when they're born, umibeten umei heirayon shekvar nigzar mibrias oilam, if you're going to say Hashem, you're not going to accept my previous request that you should terminate, you should prevent it from happening to begin with. V'el ishech tushuk haseich, because the pasuk says it's a mitzvah, it's a reality in this world that women have a right to conceive and become and have children. It's part of a person's right. In this world, at least Hashem, once they're past that stage, tein lohem mehera bikat nusam. They should die when they're infants or very little. Ma sha'ato oimer li tein lohem li achar zman. What you're planning to do to them when they become adults? Shamarta, because you Hashem said ki im yigadlu es b'nem v'shikaltim. Because if you will allow their children to become adults, then they will bereave them. But so Hashem tried to minimize that pain by having it happen earlier. Next words of Rashi, Tein lohem rechem mashkil, b'shosh sheyoytzin la'avir olam yamusu. They should die immediately. O yitztamku shideimu. So he's learning not like the mitzvahs. And so this over here just said they shouldn't become pregnant. He says it's two sides of a coin. That a woman's dadim develop during the time of pregnancy. So if the dadim are not developing during the time of pregnancy, that's the indication that the pregnancy is going wrong. There's something wrong. There is no pregnancy, or the pregnancy is defective. So it's not what he learns. He's learning, no, pregnancy is done. Now the baby is in this world. But now the baby needs nourishment. The way I explained the process when we started, the baby needs to be fed. If there's no, the mother can't nurse, then the baby is going to starve to death. Simple as that. To nurse. Okay, this is the parish of Rashi. Let's take a look here of Radak says, when he sees what's going to happen, they're going to go to Ashur.
Right,
Better they should die and not go into Golis. Rechem mashkil sheyemusu babeten. They should die babeten. The Amar mashkil ki ilu harechem mashkil, or some the beten is bereaving them. Ki berechem heim shakum, they're going to die. V'shtayim tzayim kois im yagil aleda. It's like Rashi. If they do are born, sheyitztamku tzayim osim, the dadim of the nashim, the mothers, should dry up. V'yemusu be'efes cholav, with nothing what to drink. Tzaymkin means yevashim. Okay. Let's see over here. Let's see maybe the Malbim. Let's see the Malbim. Pasuk Yidaltein Lachem. Hanavi meis ponev el Hashem. The Navi is now being mispala. It's a very important Malbim. Malbim here is emphasizing something which is very simple, but it may not be obvious unless you pay attention. Most of what we learn in Nevi'im are basically the words of Hashem. The Nevi'im are not acting on their own. The Nevi'im are seeing a vision. Some of them have a clear vision. Some of them have a cloudy vision, but they are relaying the word of Hashem. It's not that often we find in the Sifrei Nevi'im, the Nevi'im are doing things on their own. They're making decisions, and they are influencing people without the directive of Hashem. Here, the Navi is not being instructed to do this. Hashem on his own is turning his face to Hashem. U'mispalel, he's praying, Shelo yigale magoyle. Omer tain lohem Hashem tidein written lemar tain lohem ha'oinesh ha'rohi loseis lohem ba'avoin ha'nif to the sin of adultery k'moy she'darkicho litin midik neged mida she'ba'avoin haznus. So we're saying a whole new idea. I didn't pay attention to this. She'ba'avoin haznus rohi she'tidein lohem rechem mashkil v'shadayim tzoyim kim de'inyin shlo yuchlu lohoylid Lohoilid bine zununim, velo yuchlu legadlom, velo yisrabu mam zeirim, vize hoinishoroi. Avaloi oinishol golus vigerish me artsam sheinem midi kenegimid. Unbelievable Malbim. The Malbim is putting a very positive twist on this. He's not like Rashi, not like anything we've learned until now. He's saying, it's not midi kenegimid. The whole derech of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is midi kenegimid. So just because they are mezane and they commit adultery and they produce mamzerim, they have to go to Golus. What's the midah keneged midah of going to Golus for the sin of Niyuf? The midah keneged midah would be they should be denied the ability to have children. That's terrible, terrible pain, obviously. That's a gefarlich thing. But but in the big picture for Klal Yisrael, it's much better. In the big picture, going to Golus involves the end of the whole Aseres HaShvatim. Involves enormous suffering, poverty, pain, all the things.
But we know that Hashem never changes the derech olam.
Derech olam. So that's exactly, maybe you're saying, that's exactly why Rashi quoted the pasuk, you can't do that because they'll ishech teshuk hoseich. Rashi, Rashi's really saying a chid, because all that pasuk means is that a woman yearns, teshuka means she yearns. Yeah. Doesn't say that she has children. Rashi really, really jumps. Mm-hmm. He says, "Ve'al ishech teshuka sech teaches you that it's within the right of a woman to produce children." Where do you see that in the pasuk? All the pasuk literally means is that a woman yearns for her husband's attention. That's really what it says. Ve'al ishech, that a woman has a need for company. Tzafsa. Or what Chazal say, "Tov lemesav tondu melemesav armaloi." A woman, it's much easier for a woman to settle for a husband that's not ayayay, it's just ayayay, than a man, because a woman has more of a need for companionship. And that's what the pasuk really, v'el ishech, that was part of the curse. That was part of the curse of Chava, v'el ishech teshukosech. You will yearn for your husband, the company, the attention of your husband. And here Rashi takes this pasuk and builds a whole skyscraper out of this pasuk. What it means is that it's the God-given right of every woman to have children. What does it say that in the pasuk? I don't know, but that's how Rashi learned pshat in the pasuk. The Radak, obviously.
Where she gets the attention of the husband?
What?
Having children.
Is that really so? Is that really so?
Another woman.
By having children, so now the husband...
That brings them all together.
Rashi, okay, you're saying an idea. Right. By having children, the husband just can't abandon her anymore.
That's what it means.
Now, okay, you're saying very good. You're saying very tief. It's a very tief of art. By having a child, having a child, so then the husband has to pay attention to the wife because he is the mother of her, of his children. You always hear that. You always hear men say that. She, this woman, she is the mother of my children. Is that a compliment or an insult? To me, it sounds like an insult. I really don't like her. But listen, she gave me children, so I have to have respect for her. That's not such a compliment.
It works the other way too.
I like her because I like her. And I also love her because she gave me children.
Clearly children bring the husband and wife together.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, for or against, whatever. With all the argument, they're both arguing about the children, you know.
All about the children. All about the children.
No, I mean,
so it's, it
doesn't always work.
No, but I'm saying...
That theory doesn't always work.
What theory?
That brings them together, children. I know. There are many cases where a couple, the woman says, well, the marriage is not going great, but maybe I'll have another child improve, and in many cases...
It doesn't improve, right. It makes it even worse. The stress, I know a case like that. I know exactly that. Stress totally makes it out of proportion. All right, any event, obviously the Radak did not go for Rashi's Perish. Okay, he doesn't say this idea over here, Yel Yishech Teshukah Seich means that, and Adarava, he's saying he's changing the way of the world. He's being misfollowed, that it's Hashem, it's not fair. Zelo fair. Mida keneged mida. It's not mida keneged mida. Because they're mizane, they're mamzerim, they should go to Golos. Let them remain in Eretz Yisrael, which has enormous benefit for Klal Yisrael, enormous benefit. And the punishment will be in matters of Ishus. Ishus. They were mizane, they made mamzerim, mida keneged mida. They're not going to have legitimate children. So that's his tefillah. That's a very positive twist on what he's trying to say, according to the Radak. Okay, now let's the Malm. Now let's see the Medrash. The Medrash is very, very frightening. On the bottom page 141, Pasuk Yudale, Tein Lechem Hashem Matidin, Tein Lechem Rechem Mashkil, a bereaved womb, Vishadayim Tzemkoyis and Dadim, which are dry, Lefish Amar Lohem Moshe Lishol Dvarm Koshim Tchila. He compares Hosea in this context to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe said, Mizei Rav Ulechume Reshef. Okay, mizei means like pangs of famine. Uluchume reshef, and I'm not sure what that means. Reshef is some type of battles of like the demons. I think a reshef means like one of the shadim. Uluchume that the demons, the forces of evil will battle against you. You'll have no mazel, no success. It's a curse. Moshe said you're going to suffer from pangs of famine and you're going to suffer from forces of failure. Now, some people, whatever they do, they can't succeed. And some people, whatever they do, I know this guy, I cannot believe it. I heard a story yesterday. This guy, whatever he does, he's matzliach. Ish matzliach. He's going to be the biggest shite in the world. Whatever you do is gold. And some people, the biggest chachamim, they just have no mazel. So here it says Moshe is giving. What? Why? They're very rich funeral directors. They're very successful, great job. Your clients don't complain. No complaints. A lot of rabbanim became undertakers. Because after the after dealing with people who balbatim, who open up their mouth to them, they wanted some menucha. The clients don't complain. Eric Heffert says all the time. Always talks about this.
What a translation of the phrase, right?
Yes, please.
Loading of famine and battles of flaming demons.
All right, okay, so I said, so bloating. I said luchume means pang. So he says more precisely, mizeh means bloating. It's the same idea. When a rachman so when a person is, when there's famine, so the stomach bloats. So it's pangs of famine. Luchume means bad, lashon of loichei milchemes Hashem, war. Who's going to war against you? Your mazel. The forces of evil. What are the forces of evil? Who knows? Some Kabbalistic concept. But it means a person has no, Moshe's cursing these people, you will have no success in anything that you do if you go against Hashem's will. Now that's a pretty serious curse, right? That's Moshe Rabbeinu obviously got very emotionally involved in his role. And if Moshe can say such sharp things in Hazinu, Okay, this pasuk in Hazinu, Mizei Rav Uluchumi Reshef, and then he writes further, Umichutz Teshakel Chedef Umechadorim Eimah. Outside, the sword is killing people right and left, and the people inside, they're going out of their mind. The terror, Eimah, is causing people indoors to be overwhelmed with psychological problems. Who's better off? The people inside, the people outside. The people outside, at least they die, it's over. They're in the next world. People here inside, they're losing their minds. And then Moshe, he quotes here the Meshach, all the psukim of Moshe Rabbeinu getting angry. You angered Hashem. Mamrim Hayisem, you are rebellious people. Chaz, Moshe Rabbeinu was a pretty serious in his curses, in his negativity. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu has to compensate by giving Klal Yisrael the ultimate brachas. It's his duty. If he gave Klal Yisrael such harsh punishment, he has to give them brachas. What's his duty? Chazav Yabalochem Divrei Nichumim V'zois HaBrachosh Berach Moshe. Right after Hazinu, where there are some gefarlich things, Moshe gives bracha to Klal Yisrael over here. The Medrash teaching us that it's not a coincidence that Hazinu and V'zois HaBracha are juxtaposed. It's not a coincidence. It's by design. After Moshe Rabbeinu felt the need to warn them before he died of doing Averos and to give them these very harsh curses, so with comes with the package the requirement to compensate and give them the ultimate blessings. And that's why it begins with V'zois HaBracha Sheberach Moshe. Now here is a beautiful medrash. I mean, it's really shocking. It's very, we learn over here today such powerful stuff. Umimenu lamdu kol hanavim. Their barachos must correspond to their klolos, their toichacha. Shahayu kol nevim. Shahayu oimim lohem liyishol dvarim kashim tchila v'chayishim v'oimim lohem divrei nechamas. And we know that by Yeches. We know that's certainly true when it comes to Yeshaya. Chazal say Yeshaya was more on the side. The first, most of Yeshaya is toichacha. It's only the end from Perek Nun to Perek Mem to the end. Is it? It's only a minor section of the last 15-20 prakim is in Nechama. And yet Chazal say the Yeshaya kula nechemta. The whole Yeshaya is one big sefer of Nechama. Really? The first 40. After Mem. Really? The first 39 prakim, I'm sorry, don't seem to have much words of comfort. It's pretty serious stuff. So how could we call Nechemta? So it's a vikasha, what it means. It means obviously that you have zelu mazed, it's both, but there's more, or the tone, the compensation maybe, is more nechama than toichacha, or even in the toichacha, to some degree, it's tempered with a shtickle, it's a shtickle nechama. It's not as harsh as it could have been. On the other hand, Yirmiyah Chazal says, kula toichacha. Really, some of the most beautiful nechamos are found. Lechteich achrei b'midbar b'eretz lezerua. Chas nurayich. You have the most beautiful pesukim which we incorporate into nusach tefillah. It doesn't come from Yeshaya. It comes from Yirmiyah. So how can Chazal say that Yirmiyah is kula toichacha? So again, it's a very tough question. So it means that there's still more. The intensity is still so great, we still focus on the Teichacha more than we focus on the Nechama. Or even in the Nechama is not as great as it could have been. You have to really work and play with this. Everyone has a very hard time explaining what this means. But here, we're not learning Yeshaya, we're not learning Yirmiyah, we're learning Hosea. And what does it say over here? Now the next words of the Medrash, the Ein Luchana, these words are just off the charts, Rabbi Isai. Okay, we're learning over here really heavy, heavy duty stuff over here. The Ein Luchana, over here on the page 141, three lines from the very bottom of the page, there were two lines, and the Likutei Shas. The Ein Luchana b'chol ha-nevim shahayu devarim kashim k'hoshaya. There is no one of all the prophets, there are 48 prophets, of all the 48 prophets, no one was as harsh to us as Hosea. Techilas, and where, show me, chapter and verse, show me where. Show me the pasuk that puts him over the top. He gets the award for being the harshest, he gets the gold for being the harshest Navi. Where? What we learned today. We learned today the curse The tefillah, now we learned Rashi, the Mitzudos, Mal, everyone's struggling. They're struggling. It's not a bad thing. It's mamish a tefillah for good. He's trying to save us. The Medrash doesn't go down that path. The Medrash reads the words pshutoi kemashmoi. He's not trying to do us any favors here, Hoshea. Yeah, let's see what it says. Yes, that's exactly what it says. Techilas dvorov amar lohem. Tein lohem Hashem atitin. Give them what they deserve. Wipe them off. They shouldn't have children. Their children should die. I mean, we're talking about the most kefrelcha thing. Tein lohem rechem mashkil v'shadayim tzaymkim. I mean, he doesn't mince words here. Don't say all this drush. He's making Rashi and all of the Malbim and the Radak look like darshanim. A chassidish rebbes. Because the Medrash are saying, pshuta kimashma, he's cursing Klal Yisrael. Hashem finished them off for their sins. If that's the case, so he has a duty, zeh l'uma zeh, for him to give us the biggest brachas. Every Navi who gives toichacha, the bracha has to correspond zeh l'uma zeh to the toichacha. So the Melech Hashem indeed gives us the biggest nechama. The ein lechem chalan, v'am lechem nechamais, yelchu yoin koisav, v'yiyu chazayis hoidai. Okay, so this is later on in Perek Yudalit. They're yoin kois, which means they're infants. May they go forward, and they may be like a zayis, hoidai, their praise. The biggest bracha you can give a person is to have good children. There's no everything, we all know that, devarim pshutim ad moed. Every bracha in this world pales in comparison to a bracha of having nachas from your children. Yeah?
There's mention of Ephraim, so this is...
The Aseres HaShvatim.
The tenth Shvatim.
Yes.
Not Yehuda and Binyamin.
Well, you know, it's not so simple because like we say, Habein Yaker Li Ephraim. Yelet Shashurim. So there the commentators say that when Yirmi was speaking there, he was referring to the whole Klal Yisrael. And why does he focus on Ephraim, which refers only to the 10 Shvatim? Since they're the majority of 12, so we koilel even Yehuda and Binyamin in Ephraim.
Well, with 130 odd years later, after
10 right, especially when Yirmiyah is speaking, he was no longer in Ephraim. Ephraim already went into, they were gone at that point in time, they were long gone.
Over here.
Okay, so, you know, it's subject to interpretation. The Pshuta Shel Mikra obviously is only referring to the Aseres HaShvatim. But it's not necessarily the only Pshat. Ephraim, sometimes in Chazal, is a term which refers to the entire Klal Yisrael. Okay, it's not...
That was the upshot, because at the time when he said Abein Yakil Ephraim, Yehuda Binyamin was still not in Golis.
Over
later
here,
on, we say obviously you meant everybody. He's warning Yehuda and right. Ephraim.
Okay, so it's subject to interpretation. Pshuta Shel Mikra Ephraim is always a term that refers to the Aseres HaShvatim, but that's not all necessarily true. Ephraim also refers to the entire Klal Yisrael. Ephraim, we know Ephraim was represents, you know, Ephraim and Menashe. Keruvei v'Shimon Yuli, Yaakov Avinu put everything in Ephraim. The whole legacy of Klal Yisrael was Sikel Es Yadav, Ki Menashe HaBuchar, Yaakov Avinu, the third of the Avos, when he's giving over the Brachos, who is he giving it over to? To Ephraim.
Besides the passage that he brings down, yet the Elchu Yon Koisov is in Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, which we say for today for Gans Klal Yisrael.
Right, okay. And Echnami.
What are you saying?
So this is a very important lesson. He's saying over here that this passage, I think over here he's saying in the middle that the worst passage in Tanakh, we learned today, the worst passage in the whole Tanakh is what we learned today. Tein lohem Hashem atitein. Give them what they deserve. Give them a rechem mashkil, their children should die, stillborn should die, mitzvimkais, if they have children should die, the worst klala. And what is the pasuk, the biggest bracha in Gans Tanakh, what's the biggest bracha, the very end of Hoshea, yelchul yoin koisav, they should go forward, they should be successful, and the kazayis hoidai, the beauty of your children should be compared to a zayis. Zayas, obviously, whatever it symbolizes, Zayas and Aleph represents Lichtigkeit, or, and we know Dvarm Shutim Admoid, money, and all the Meshigasim that this world has to offer is garnish from garnish compared to Nachas from children. Dvarm Shutim Admoid, and who's the one who said it? Hosea! He's the one that gets the credit. He said the extreme zeluma zebrolukim. There's another also interesting point over here that he brings forth is that this was his first nevuah. At least as the medrash thing is saying, what did he say tachila? Tachilas devarav. If you take the medrash literally, we all know that in muktam mu'uchar, we all have it very, very often, is that when you go through nevim, which one of his prophecies was the first? Like Yeshaya. It wasn't Perek Aleph. Yeshaya's first prophecy, I think, was Perek Vav. I think it was the Maisa Merkava. The first prophecy Yeshaya had was the Maisa Merkava, where he said, Kodosh, 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 Hashem Tzuvakos. And I believe that's Perek Vav. That's Perek Vav. And you learn the Haftarah in Parshas Yisro. So that was the first Nevuah of Yeshaya. And what we learn on Shabbos Chazoin, the beginning of Sefer Yeshaya, Chazoin Yeshaya ben Amos, Asher Chazal, Yudim Yishloim, and Perek Aleph, that was not his first prophecy, even though it's Perek Aleph, that was later on in his life. So, same thing with all of the prophets. And everyone is always, I think we learn, Yirmiyah, I vaguely remember, this was the first prophecy. Maybe this is the first prophecy. The Mefarshim were always trying to figure out, chronologically, which one was the first, which one was the last, this, that, and try to match up dates. And here, Hosea is no different. Hosea's first prophecy, he's telling us here, was this pasuk, this section. This section that we're learning now was his initiation into being a prophet. It's very true. People, when they start out in the beginning, they're very tough. They're very extreme. It takes years to mellow. There's no such thing. I've never heard of like a Rebbe or Rosh Shiva that did not mellow over the years. There's no such thing. I know they said about my grandfather. My grandfather was Rosh Shiva in RJJ. So he was very, very, the early Talmidim, he was very tough. I heard these very strange stories. He was very, 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 very tough. But later years, and there's no doubt, I mean, he mellowed to such an extreme. I even know my own Rebbeim, okay, in Chaim Berlin. When I first saw the Rebbeim, you know, they were different people. I mean, you know, life does, Mashiyasa Hazman, Layasa Haseichel. Totally different people, totally mellowed. Totally, you know, they've changed. The whole outlook is totally different. So by the Nevi'im also, Hosea starts out a real takif. He says, Hashem, give them what they deserve. Let them have it. And at the end of Hosea, I mean, I don't know if that's the last Nevuah.
He realizes that a lot of Rebbeim start off that way. I mean, that's the way it works.
It's human nature. It's human nature. It's with the package. Life, experience of life. This is normal. Mashayase hazman lo yase haseichel. What time does, the mind cannot do. It's an experience of time which changes your outlook on life. So that's a very important point that he brings out over here as well in this medish. Okay, it's powerful stuff. Tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, we'll start with Pasuk Tes Vav. We'll take a short break. We'll learn some Sfiras HaOmer, Halacha and Sfiras HaOmer.